Rock Talk is considering meteorology. Jankum Pog meets another Tellarite. And in Starfleet, you make it so. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello, hello.
Also, of course, joining us for all of our Prodigy episodes, we have the voice of the ship's computer and Federation voice. It's the protostar herself, Bonnie Gordon.
I don't make it so, I make it go, everybody. Let's go!
That works. My name is Ryan T. Husk. Sometimes I do really long intros. Sorry about that. Today, we're doing a review of Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, Episode 14, entitled Crossroads. And this one was written by Lisa Schultz Boyd and directed by Steve N. Cheng On and Sung Shin. How are you guys today?
Fantastic. Ready to jump in, dive in, go fast, as Dal would say.
Everybody listening in right now, I think this might be the best three-person shirt combo ever. I'm wearing a Voyager documentary to the Journey shirt. Bonnie here is wearing a Captain Proton frickin' shirt, and Sirach Lofton is wearing my second favorite of his shirts, an X-Men shirt. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
We got some good shirts happening.
All right.
We're such a fashionable group.
Oh yeah, we've got all the genres covered for a good convention.
Yeah, from here up, we all match.
After that,
we're ready for Comic-Con, guys. We're ready.
Okay. First of all, you guys, there was a Zindi. There were two Zindis in this episode from Star Trek Enterprise. The Zindi, there are six, if I remember correctly, there's six Zindi races, one of which are the reptilian Zindis. And there were two of them. They were the guards, and they had like the little things coming out of their heads. And they're immediately recognizable. And so I was very happy to see them because the Zindi were basically the entirety of Star Trek Enterprise season three. It was like a one full season arc, and they dominated it. And then they never showed up again in any Star Trek ever. And Star Trek fans like myself have been clamoring for them. So I was very happy to see them.
That's one of the things I love about Prodigy is that they're bringing in so many different alien species and some species that we just don't get to see a lot of, especially when it comes to live action due to like makeup budget and different things like that. But with animation, you know, there's just so much they can do, even if it's just like a one episode, you know, Easter egg of like, look, these species that we've introduced do exist still in the universe and they still serve a purpose. So it just kind of widens the universe and solidifies some of the characters I've already seen. It's one of the reasons I love Lower Decks so much, because it's one of the only series right now that has Kzinti represented.
Yes.
Which I love that. That's, I apologize awesome. In advance for my cat. He's back there being very suspicious, and I have a feeling he's trying to get somewhere to knock something
down.
He's
gonna knock it down a glass.
Yeah. So if you hear loud crashing behind me, just know that it's
that's Bonnie throwing stuff at him. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'm just very angry.
Speaking of the Kzinti, another alien that we saw in this episode, very similarly pronounced, the Kazon. Did you notice the Kazon from Voyager? That was also a very cool one. Sirach, you'll remember the Kazon as the other race that our buddy Mr. Aaron Eisenberg played. That was the alien race that he played in Voyager. He was a Kazon.
Yeah. Who was the Kazon in this episode?
No, it's just a guy. I don't even know if he had any lines.
We saw the Kazon in the pilot of Prodigy. If you remember, there was a Kazon trader ship that brought in the little cute Kashian
exactly.
They were trading the Kashian to the planet, to the diviner, and that's and Gwyn got to yell at him and Kazon, which I thought was always great.
And this
my
time
cat
it was
is about to get in big trouble.
This time the Kazon appeared, it was talking with Barnes Frex, I think his name is Barnes Frex, right?
Oh, that's
Franks,
what it was.
Franks, I think. Barnes Franks, no.
It's pronounced
Franks. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Anyway, so that was the Kazon, but that was the awesome thing. Now there was one other really big thing. I don't know if you want to get into it right now, but there was a character named the Outrageous Okona from Star Trek: The Next Generation. He was in one episode early on, maybe second season ish. Guess I could look that up. But he was the guy. Yeah, he was the guy that was hiding in their speeder. And
very much like a Han Solo character, like a one man show smuggler, like super cool, you know.
Oh yeah. Where does that come from? Which episode is that?
Next Generation. I'm looking it up right now. It's Next Generation season 2 episode 4.
Isn't it what episode where like he wants to marry? No, it's not. No, that's a different episode.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but he was basically the biggest player in the history of Star Trek.
He was bouncing. Like, he was bouncing, but bigger than Riker,
Worf,
which is
and
big.
Worf was like trying to track him down, and he kept trying to track him down, like in the ladies' crew's quarters and stuff like that. And it was he was just going from one hump to the next. It was pretty crazy, if
really?
I remember correctly. So Sirach will that episode will be coming up at the beginning of season 2. I'm sure we'll enjoy a lot.
Riker had to get rid of him.
He's like, get him out of here.
Wait a minute. Get this competition out of here. There can only be one ladiesman on board, and I play the trombone.
Okay, so that's a drawback character. I kind of like that character.
Yeah. I love that they bring that. Like, I love that a lot of this new Trek has so many amazing Easter eggs throughout each series. Of really keeping, you know, the universe alive. I mean, just look at episode 13 where, oh yeah, there he is.
That's him right there talking with Data and little Wes holding
Wesley, whatever was that so was. Starstruck by him too. Like he just thought the world of this guy.
And the
like,
way he was recognizable was because he had an eye patch over his right. Or no, he got the eye patch.
The eye patch
later.
Was later.
Yeah. Okay. He didn't have it actually.
He looks like the main hero in The Princess Bride.
Wesley.
Totally. Yes. Yeah, Wesley, coincidentally enough, yeah.
As you wish.
As you wish.
But he's less than
a buttercup.
That's what he said to all the ladies on the Enterprise.
Yeah. Same thing, huh? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Really cool cameo.
I had no idea about all this stuff, and I still like this episode just for what it was. I didn't, you know, I don't recognize all the Easter eggs. I just go with the story. And to me, like, this adventure is so interesting. And the way they are writing it is so fun to watch as it unfolds. Just the idea of Janeway chasing herself, kind of, like, or chasing the version of herself, you know? I think that's so clever. The way they bumped into each other and her kind of piecing together what's going on really quickly, like figuring things out. I'm really excited about that. And I'm also kind of like saying, they're not going to get away from Janeway. So how are they going to figure out how to not, you know, destroy Starfleet with this weapon and still get in contact with Janeway and her crew? So that mystery that's lingering out there is so much fun for me to watch them put it together.
What I love too is that we're finally getting both sides of the story. You know, you have hologram Janeway and the crew of the Protostar, and then you have Vice Admiral Janeway and her crew, and we're finally getting to see them interact. Obviously, it wasn't how we wanted it to happen. Isn't it so frustrating? Like, you know, the way it falls, where you're just like, just tell them, tell them. But like,
I was,
you know,
with Rock Talk on that too. By the way, Rock
me
Talk
too.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was like,
the
wait a minute.
The brains.
Like, you guys didn't tell them like that.
Nobody told them. Yeah.
Oh, for four.
Yeah, exactly. Each one of them met someone from Starfleet.
Yeah.
Also, may I just say, I didn't think it was possible. In fact, I actually texted the Hagemans right before we started recording this going, I didn't think it was possible, but you made Murph even cuter? Like, how? I didn't think it was possible for Murph to be cuter. And I haven't seen, you know, I haven't gotten to see like the full episodes yet of Murph's transformation. So this is the first time I get to see what he's transformed into, and I was like, are you kidding me? Now he's even cuter. He has little feet and little hands and he's like walking around like a toddler. I was like, oh my gosh, no, this is too cute. Except, you know, he needs to work on his butt skills, because I think every time he's landed on the console, he shot something, you know?
Ew.
Well, I meant like a torpedo, not like a diaper, but I mean, you know, you can think about it that way.
They call them torpedoes too, though.
Yeah, so. That's true. I've changed many a diaper in my days. Yeah. It's a red alert situation, that's for sure. Yeah. Ryan's not happy with this.
They're like, yeah. Let's move jokes on. That all flew through my head, and every one of them, I was like, nope, shouldn't say that. Nope,
don't
can't
do
say
that.
That. Nope, leave that alone. No, then moving on.
Torpedo launched. No.
Flash.
Oh man. the very good moments in this episode. I thought Kate Mulgrew did some of her, like, really, I know it's voice acting, but it was really good. And I enjoyed watching her kind of go through the motions of playing Vice Admiral Janeway. There's a distinction there between how she plays Vice Admiral Janeway and how hologram Janeway is kind of portrayed. So I can see the subtle differences in her performance that she gives.
Especially the way she speaks to the characters. You know, obviously she has no knowledge of these, of Dal, or, you know, she has no warmth in her voice when speaking to him in the beginning, because as Admiral, she has no idea who he is. Where hologram Janeway, on the other hand, is, you know, has that relationship with him. But kudos to, my favorite scene in this episode was Dal meeting Janeway. Like, it was like him meeting a movie star. You know, he was so starstruck, and he was just like, you know, he couldn't believe he was meeting the Janeway, which is kind of how I feel when I see Kate Mulgrew anywhere. I'm just like, and I just don't say anything. And then I just look like I'm, you know.
I like the way he addressed her. He was like, Captain Janeway. And she's like, I prefer Vice Admiral.
Vice Admiral. Exactly. I prefer Vice Admiral. And then, you know, she's just standing there going like, spit it out, kid, you know.
So, can I help you?
So I just wanted to point out very quickly, just to show Sorok and everybody else what a Zindi reptilian looks like.
Oh, yeah.
And because I really liked the Zindi, and I don't know if they've really fully got the love they deserve, because then after that, you've got five different distinct races and a sixth one all on one planet. And after that season on that series, we've never seen them again, and I'm like, where are the Zindi? So this is what they look like. Really cool. If you remember the two like security type aliens, these two guys. Also,
and again,
really...
in live action world, it's because they don't have the makeup budget for that. Honestly, look how awesome they look. They look incredible.
Also, what's really interesting about that, if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, because I usually am, but I'm going to throw this one out, as I remember that the Zindi, like one of the main Zindi characters, his uniform that he wore was stripped down a little bit and used for a different character in Star Trek Nemesis, the movie played by Tom Hardy. And people in the chat or in the comments can correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what I recall. I recall that they repurposed outfit and used it for Tom Hardy's character in Star Trek Nemesis, but without like those metal things. But everybody can go ahead and correct me.
Repurposed the outfit?
Yeah. Huh.
That happens, you know.
I guess that's what I remember.
There were costumes used on The Quest, the show I was on back in like 2014, that was used in Gallivant, the show Gallivant. So a lot of the armor, like, you could distinguishly see, it's like, this is the exact same costume.
Yeah.
So I like to think that it's the same universe.
I wrote down the characters' names. It was Crawford and Lopper. Zindi Crawford.
Oh, very good.
Boo.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the boo. I appreciate it. Make it even.
That's good. That was good. That was good.
That's pretty good. I remember their catchphrase. They would always say, Marsha, 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 all these guys.
I was about to go, Zindi who? Like in Whoville.
Oh,
Cindy Lou Who.
So who was this Tellarite? I kind of wanted to spend a little bit more time on the Tellarites when they met each other. I thought Jenkins was going to have more of a better interaction, and it turned out to be like a real letdown for me.
That's the doctor. Like,
yeah, Dr. Noam, played by Jason Alexander.
He was such a jerk.
I know.
Well, Taylor Whites, that's what they're known for, though. Taylor Whites are known for their, like, jerkiness and their hot-headedness.
We just
and their
don't understand aggressive... the subtleties of their culture.
Oh, that's exactly. How they, I feel
with Tellarites, like it's like that. Like they're very
abrasive and aggressive. And...
Yeah, mm-hmm. they're not. It's like Klingons, but just with less like violence and more sarcasm.
They're argumentative.
And yeah,
they like
they're
to debate.
Very stubborn.
They like they're confrontational. They're yeah.
Like if they're yelling at you, then they're actually like they like you. Apparently, something like that. Maybe.
All right.
Yeah, I guess
like, I think
the Taylorite
just insulted me. I think he likes me. You know,
I think
thought it was like I was like, why is he making him feel insecure about his size and stuff? I didn't like that. It was kind of a bully move, in my opinion.
Yeah, calling him a runt.
Yeah, a runt.
Yeah, that's
he's like,
what
oh, we call
pog means.
He's like, we call pogs runts. That's the name for runts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I mean, that could be true, but it just was like a little harsh.
Yeah,
for me,
poor Jacob.
Especially because I felt like even in the Tellarite culture of just being aggressive and confrontational, that there would be some kind of difference between the elder statesman who the doctor is mm-hmm. and a young kid like
totally.
Jankum. So you would treat a kid still like a kid, regardless of what right. the culture is, I would think. You would have some softness about it or less. You wouldn't be as abrasive, in my opinion.
And how sad that that was Jacob Pog's first interaction yeah. with another Tellarite. No, he was so excited.
I know.
He was so excited.
Another Tellarite. He was like, this is my chance. And then he, yeah, he doesn't, like, that's his one interaction. So now he's just like, wow, my people are kind of assholes.
Well, now
royalty
I know
or
why.
Not.
I just figured yeah. out, speaking of soft, I figured out why Sirach has a soft spot for Jankum Pog is because it sounds very, very close to Jake and Nog.
Yes.
I think
oh.
that's
it does.
And I
it
and
does.
I also love Jake and Nog, and I also love Jankum Pog.
Yes. And we gotta put that in one of your songs, Bonnie. A little
like, we've leave found, that to
I'm,
me.
I'm already thinking about it. Like
we already we finally found what what rhymes.
And Pog. Yeah. I'll think of it. I'm working on it. It's all up here.
Nice.
But yeah, I was a little bit offended by that. Not to mention the fact that even if you are that species, once again, the fact that you're representing the Federation and you've got one of those, you know, medallions on your chest. To me, there's a certain level of
professionalism
and professionalism that you would have when you meet a kid.
And Jacob, yeah, Jacob Pog, like you keep forgetting because of his voice and mannerisms that Jacob Pog is a kid. I mean, yeah, I think in the story they've established that he's what, like 16 maybe in what we would consider, you know, okay. our years.
But he's a kid.
They're like
clearly.
He's a teenager, but he's still probably. A kid. Yeah. And so it's a sad circumstance, the fact that, you know, he was treated so
that
badly.
He met the grumpiest Tellarite of all at the wrong time. You know,
yeah,
they're all a little haughty.
They're all
kind of haughty.
I mean, it's why in the an episode, I think it was like one or two. It's why when they were first trying to get Jacob Pog to join the crew as the engineer, why, you know, they're like, oh, that's right. You know, we don't need him. Like, what are you talking about? You know, they purposely switched the conversation around to make him argumentative and to join in. Like, you couldn't get the thing off the ground without me. You know, like
right.
they switched it on him.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they know that he would take the opposite stand
just to
be combative.
They debate just to debate.
Well, Jacob didn't let it, right? Like, it didn't bother him that much because he kept going. Well, no, what do you mean? I'm not sure. I'm not talking, you know.
It kind of gave me Danny DeVito vibes, especially. And then when the next character was just like, oh, are you okay, kid? Did you
little
lose your mommy
or something?
Yeah. Are you okay, little guy? And he was just like,
yeah,
it was great.
Those teller. Well, yeah. I'm hoping that they'll eventually soften because they're always debating. They love to argue. They're known in the mm-hmm. Federation as the master debaters. And I just think that.
Oh, gosh.
What? No, I'm just saying
Sirach
that.
Went.
I was so on the hook. You had me reeling in. I was reeling in.
I'm just saying. I'm hoping there's a. Oh wait, that was going to sound bad.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that they end up.
No,
like,
no.
There's
we'll
nothing
let it
I
go.
Can
let's
say now
it.
That doesn't
no,
sound.
Don't say anything.
No,
what I'm
it's
saying
fine.
Is, I'm hoping
everybody
that
knows
they
what
will
you mean.
Eventually, become friends and.
Yeah, and Jacob Pog, we've seen his softer side.
They will.
You know, eventually. We've seen his softer side, and I love that they, you know, play that he does have around his harder, stubborn exterior. There's a softer, sweeter interior side to him. So, and I'm sure also, that's with lots of Tellarites.
I thought that I'm really falling in love with Rock Talk's character.
I'm telling you from the beginning, Rock Talk has
Rock
been my favorite
Talk
character.
Is such a nurturing, sweet, innocent, kind of open to life's mysteries and wonders. Mm-hmm. And like, I love the fact that Rock Talk is showing so much maternal instinct, like at such this young age when it comes to Murph. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at one point Rock Talk was wearing like one of those over the shoulder bags that you wear when you have a kid
totally.
Carrying a baby, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like,
it was almost
minute.
Like, it's almost like a little girl carrying a baby doll, you know, in that way, like the playing mom, Rock Talk. I mean, it's been no secret that Rock Talk's my favorite and that I've loved every line delivery that Riley has done. But one in particular in this episode was the, we have a development. Like, it's just the way she delivers her lines that it as a voiceover actor, she does exact opposite of what you'd expect the line to sound like if you were reading it on paper. And I just love how she, like, just the way she delivers the lines makes it so interesting and funny. She's so good. And I feel like she just, it just comes naturally to her. I feel like I feel like
I wrote
in the booth,
the same line.
Yeah. We have a development. Like, she's so cute. And one thing too about Rock Talk that I love is that, you know, she, if you go back to episode, I think it was episode 7, Time Amok, where she was alone for so long.
Right.
And like having to basically just be by herself and like make stuffed animals of everyone, of the crew, you know, it just shows, you know, with her nurturing side being as it is now, it just shows like her not wanting to let go of that feeling of being connected with the others, especially Murph, since Murph's kind of been like her personal, I don't want to say pet, because I want to say like Murph is part of the crew in Murph's own way, however you want to put it. I mean, Murph launched a torpedo, you know? Way to go, buddy.
But I thought Rock Talk showed development too in this other way. There was a moment when Rock Talk was being, you know, a meteorologist, quote unquote.
Oh yeah.
And
about the storms.
And instead of feeling some type of way or getting impacted sensitively by, you know, I don't know, and there's a lot of pressure, like I don't know what's going to happen, you know, and kind of having a panic attack moment, which Rock Talk has had before under certain critical pressure moments. Mm-hmm. this was more like, I don't know, I guess I might be like I might be a meteorologist.
Like, so what, right? You're a meteorologist now? Like, maybe I am. Yeah, it's like, it's so cute. Maybe I am. Maybe not.
Right. And there was a willingness to kind of like, hey, I know something about meteorology, like not really questioning the fact that, yeah, okay, whatever you want to call it. And I think there was a growth there from where Rock Talk was originally when we saw the character kind of being insecure and not knowing that confidence that, yeah, I actually know about science. I'm very smart when it comes to
science. If you remember, there are approximately 196 branches of science. So she can have a field day with all of them.
You know what's going to be cool is when she invents the 197th. You know what I mean?
I did say approximately.
Right. When she discovers something and then she starts studying it, she starts figuring it out. Why couldn't she create a new branch of science? I think that'd be awesome.
If anyone could, it would be Rock Talk. Mm-hmm. I feel like.
I love the message that Janeway, Vice Admiral Janeway, gave to the kids, but specifically to Dal, when Janeway said, fear of failure has killed more dreams than anything else. And I was like, yeah, that's the message out there, kids. It's like, don't be afraid to fail. That's how you learn lessons, and that's how you get better.
True.
It's okay to fail. And fear of failure is worse than failure.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. That's what they say. It's better to try and fail than to fail to try.
It's like the saying says too, better to have loved and lost than to not have mm-hmm. love at all. Something like yeah. that.
We'll see about that. That one.
Yeah, that one might be a little. I'm not bitter or sad. It's fine.
I did have a good laugh when Dr. Noam, who, by the way, I'm rooting for him because I've always had a soft spot for Tellarites too, honestly, because they get the least love out of the founding Federation members. The humans, absolutely. Andorians, Vulcans, and Tellarites. Tellarites, you know, they get the least love. Mm-hmm. So I'm always kind of rooting for them. Plus, it's Jason Alexander. But he did say something funny when he was describing Dal. He said, he was like, oh, you know, kind of tall or thin or whatever. He says, the creepy dingle dangle off the back of his neck.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
That, little dingle dangle. Sometimes they throw these lines out super quick that you barely catch them, but really good.
I do love, too, that, you know, we have the diviner now starting to have his memories come back and being. And so it's. I feel like it's going to be such a weird place to put him in. So he, you know, his memories being wiped and his brain being kind of like scatterbrained right now. The fact that he's forming a relationship with Starfleet, like how will that, when his memories do come back, how will that affect, you know, how he thinks of Starfleet? Now, you know, will he be like, wait a minute, I've thought this wrong all along. And now that he has like, now that he's forming a relationship with some of them and realizing like they're not bad people. I don't know. Like because I'm wondering, okay, if the diviner is developing some kind of relationship with them, will he still want them destroyed? Or now that he's on the inside and he does get his memories back, will he use that to his advantage? You know, like I can think to myself, like, I honestly don't remember anything about the plot anymore. This has been so long.
No, and also, that's
I never got the full scripts for the end. So I'm discovering this with the viewers going, what happens? I'm just as excited now.
I'm with you on that excitement because it's, like I said earlier, I'm wondering how are they going to be able to contact the Protostar and not mm-hmm. initiate this destructive weapon that's, you know, out for the Federation. So there's all of that kind of stuff that's lingering in the air, but there's so many other things mm-hmm. that are great about this adventure because, you know, I love the moment when they buried the Protostar underneath the avalanche and later on when they were kind of running away and they're like, well, what are we going to do? You know, hey, we got to find a way to get out of here. And I think Dal's like, right.
He's like, I'm on top of it, man.
Yeah, we're on top yeah. of it. Boom.
What a cool, yeah. Dal's getting like the, I got the, it's like the walking away in slow motion with an explosion behind you. It's like that level of cool. He's like, yeah. It's basically what a flex, you know, like pressing a button. It's like driving like a really yeah. nice car and going beep, beep. And like, that's my ride. Like the Batmobile pulls up. You're like,
I did
what
like
a flex, Dal. What a flex. Yeah.
It was great. I love Jankum Pog's lines about warp, like his, like, he's so bougie about his warp yeah. speed.
Warp eight or nothing. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, warp well, four? That's nothing.
Come he kind of got spoiled. I mean, you know, the Protostar does have the Protostar warp drive. So I think he's a little spoiled in the sense that, like, they can literally fold time and space to go super speed.
Yeah. So he's like, I can't.
He's like, warp seven? Ha, pathetic. Six, seven? Child's
no less
play.
Than eight. No less yeah. than eight.
Right? Go ahead.
I just wanted to point something out. When you were talking about the Diviner, Star Trek is doing, on Paramount Plus, is doing a thing. I think it's just on Instagram. My favorite social media. Just kidding. I don't really know much about Instagram, but they do this thing on Instagram called Star Trek Logs. And they are, I believe, theoretically canon. And with every episode, they do one Star Trek log. And mm-hmm. with this one, or maybe it was the previous one, but whatever was the one that was released this week, it's Janeway, Vice Admiral Janeway's log. And it reads, Vice Admiral's log, Stardate, whatever. Despite his unknown species, Dr. Noam has stabilized our mysterious visitor by the diviner by replicating a serum found nearby. From early tests, Noam believes his physiology may possess energy-based psychokinesis, not unlike some Zalconians. Now, of course, this could just be a red herring. It could, you know, whatever. It's just, it could be anything.
Yeah.
But Zalconian is also another alien species from Next Generation. There was a character that they just called John Doe that was a Zalconian. And I think he like glowed or something like that. It's like fifth season. So that is something to consider.
Into like a glowing,
I don't know if they're going to put
green
it
man
totally on the nose or just give us a little hint like that. But, you know, it's possible they could be Zalconians or an offshoot of Zalconians. They look different. But anyway, that's just a fun, interesting little tidbit. And everybody go follow Star Trek Logs at Star Trek Logs on Instagram, because those, I do believe, are official and canon.
They are official. And Aaron Walke, I believe, writes them and has Kate Milgrew record them.
That's all we need to know then.
That's if Aaron Walke writes them, then you know it's canon. Yep. And you know it's legit. Then you know what to be true. You know what it is to be true.
I just hope the diviner is not a cubic Zalconian.
Oh, this is the,
no. Yes. Boo, stop. No, yes. No, boo.
Yes, yes. Your pain makes us stronger, Bonnie.
No, it hurts. I'm groaning. Oh, gosh.
As my daughter would say, dad jokes, dad jokes. She does that
What's
to me all the time.
What's my excuse?
Yeah. I have a dad bod. That's like the closest thing I get. I got the keg right here.
You know who I like though is Ensign Essentia.
Totally.
There was something about Ensign Essentia that stood out to me. I don't know, just presence wise. Maybe it's the voice. It was something about made me curious to know more about Ensign Essentia. It's
she's
crazy.
Played by Jamila Jamil, right?
Yes, who I just love. I'm just such a huge fan of her. She's just so great. Mm-hmm. I do love her. That she was the one who had the interaction with Gwen. I thought it was cool having two young, you know, female characters interacting where they're both obviously such strong women. Her as an ensign trying to, you know, get up the ranks, you know, mm-hmm. who's obviously extremely smart and also a Trill, which I love.
And stood up for Gwen against the Klingon and basically ready to throw down.
They're the closest in age of all of the possible pairings. So I found that to be super. I mean, obviously you got the young Tellarite and the old Tellarite. And I've already said, I hope there's a happy ending there where those two guys can just come and be friends and one could be a mentor to the other or something, because we're rooting for Jankum for sure. But there's something there with Ensign Essentia and Gwen where they, you know, they could practically be besties.
They can have sleepovers.
You know, they're almost, they're close in
Girl
age.
Talk. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, that Worf knockoff better not reach for Gwen's arm because he's going to get his ass kicked. Gwen's got a weapon right there if she wants it to be. And I'm like, he's going to find out the hard way if he goes any farther than this.
Not only that, I mean, we've saw Gwen take down quite a few Borg and, you know, all kinds of stuff, bare hand, you know, with her bare hands, basically. Like, she is a warrior. And I think that Klingon would severely underestimate her. If he tried to swing blows.
I did like sleep mode on the ship. The ship being in sleep mode. You know, I never heard that before. But
like our iPhones.
And how cute was hologram Janeway? She was like, "How long has I been out? Tell me everything. I want to know." Like she was so excited. She's like, "Tell me all about your adventures. I want to know everything." Like she was so excited to see them again and to hear about what they've done, which, you know, was like 30 minutes of chaos and be like, "Well, we're back."
You didn't miss much.
Yeah, you didn't miss much. Didn't go as planned. We're still here. And also we got this guy. I'm excited to see that dynamic because now they have pretty much a smuggling, like illegal,
vagabond.
A vagabond, you know, basically a Han Solo on their ship.
Janeway likes him. He winked at her when he walked in. That was cute.
Yeah.
He gave her a wink and she was like, "Oh, he'll be fine."
I don't know. I know. She's probably going to be like, "I don't like this." But the fact that they're ending the episode with them going into the neutral zone, like what a
yeah.
I was so upset the episode was ending.
I know. That's the thing about these. They're too short. They're too short.
Yeah. Right when the episode ended, I was like, what's about to happen?
It was three Romulan warbirds. And those things are gigantic. If I remember correctly, a warbird is about three times the size of a galaxy class starship. That's three times the size of the Enterprise D. So compared to the protostar.
Oh, the protostar is like an ant, you know, but the Dauntless. Okay. That was one thing I loved
Dauntless
is the protostar with the protostar, us seeing the Dauntless, seeing them together in the same frame for the first time, we're getting an idea of A, how small the protostar is, how compact and tiny it is as a ship, and how huge the Dauntless is. Seeing them together in the same frame, it's like, oh my gosh. And this it also gives you the, you know, big mama bird going after the little baby bird. Like it gives you that like dynamic of like, here's Starfleet and then here's the protostar, you know, like running away. So it kind of gives you that same dynamic of like, here's a bunch of kids on this little bitty baby ship with this giant, with everything giant chasing after them.
That baby ship packs a punch. That's going to be its secret there. Yeah.
So I miss the Dauntless naming. They named the ship in this episode, or we knew that already?
It was already named.
It was already named. And then they also mention it again. They do mention it. Hologram Janeway is like, you have the real me chasing after you in a back-to-back, like Dauntless class thing. And it's, I think, it's called the Dauntless, I believe, as well.
It is. Which is,
why not?
The other thing is, and I've said before, and I think Sirach has certainly stated this as well, and Bonnie, you seem about the same, but I'm not big on the ship porn. Like some people go nuts for like ships and stuff, right? I'm less about that kind of stuff, although I do think it's cool. But every time they start an episode with this establishing shot of the exterior of a ship, it looks so freaking gorgeous. It looks almost like live action, real CGI. When you're first coming in, you're just like, God, that looks beautiful. And then they go into the ship and it's animated people. But I'm always so impressed with how great those ships look, especially on the exterior. They look sleek and they're beautiful.
Yeah. The animation and effects departments are just blowing it out of the water with this show. Like it's just so watching them being chased in warp, you know, just looking at the colors that like visually, it's just so, I don't want to use the term eye candy because it's something that's like, it's just visually stunning to me. I feel like this show in particular, you know, you just pause the color schemes that they use and like the space, the colors of space, like just showing it makes space a lot more welcoming, I think. And I think, which is really important with kids watching, to not make space a scary thing, because, you know, space can be scary. It's basically a giant vacuum of nothing when you think about it. But with the way that they're animating it, it makes it so much more welcoming and adventurous and colorful and fun, I think. Words.
Yeah, plus I don't see this show having too much extra, like, it gets right to the chase pretty much right away.
Absolutely.
And every story, every scene is moving it forward. There's no moments where you're sitting there like, okay.
There's no filler.
Right. There's no filler.
Fly right through it.
You fly right through these episodes and they're giving you story. They keep giving you a little bit more. You're like, okay, I'm figuring it out. Adventure. And then it ends like right before you want more, you know? This is going to be one of the best shows to binge watch when they're all said and done.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Super binge watch. I plan on going back and watching every single one in tandem.
I was thinking the same thing when I was watching this time. I was like, you know, you really could just watch this all the way through, like tasty nuggets of goodness. And each one, you know, just leads into the next and it's all beautiful. It almost, and earlier I was thinking, Sirach, when you were talking about, you know, like I'm seeing these references and as a nerd, I'm catching these references. Other people are catching a lot more, I'm sure. And they're yelling at their screen because I'm like only kind of half glossing over this stuff that I barely remember. But it's really telling that somebody that knows less of these Easter eggs or none of them if they're still enjoying this, that's the sign of good writing, because anybody can throw these references in and to make us Star Trek nerds happy. But what about the people that are actually just watching it flat out for the story and for the entertainment? Yeah. And if it works, that's when you have a really good show. And it seems like they're really coming up aces right now.
Absolutely. When, you know, if you're ever curious about like, oh, I wonder what Easter eggs they have, I think just ask Aaron Walkey. I'm going to start calling it the Walkey way. Like, that's like, what little nuggets has he thrown in for us today? You know, the Walkey way.
It's like our galaxy.
Yeah, it sounds like a galaxy. The Walkey way.
Ooh. No, just more song ideas in my head. Sorry.
No, he's definitely got a full understanding and grasp on Star Trek and what it means. And he makes so much references and just knows the pace, the storylines that are going to be interesting.
The whole writer's really room, they're just knocking it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love watching these kids. It's like this is actually the first show that shows Star Trek and Starfleet from an outside perspective. These guys are not Starfleet, right? So we're watching the adventures of kids who want to be Starfleet. And
us, we all want to be Starfleet.
Us.
These kids are us. We're like, I want to do the right thing too. I want to join Starfleet. But oh, crap.
Right.
I have what it takes to be a cadet. We don't know.
Star Trek's never told that way. It's never told through the eyes of something from the outside. It's always the crew, whether it's the lower decks or the upper decks, you know, it's still the crew. And it's still, you know, the allegiance essentially to the training and the history of Starfleet. These guys are flying completely by the seat of their pants. They have no instructions. They don't, you know, they're just going off of instinct, off of goodwill, and also off of Janeway's guidance and her advice.
Yeah.
So I love the premise already. Mm. And, you know, eventually, I know seasons down the line, those kids are going to eventually be Starfleet and get commissioned.
Here's hoping.
Yeah, we're hoping they will. But until then, I'm really enjoying watching the journey.
How cool would it be if they end up going enlisting into Starfleet Academy and Chief Miles O'Brien is their instructor, is their professor? Then we'd all be very happy. But since you mentioned our good buddy, Mr. Aaron, Jay Waltke, I wanted to see if he, because he's always putting up some nice tidbits for everybody online. So I was just checking, and today, an hour ago, he puts out, quote, have you seen the outrageous preview stills dropped for this week's Star Trek Prodigy Crossroads? First of all, outrageous is obviously a reference, a wink to the outrageous Okona. But then he says, I hear there's some erstwhile thieves and classic Trek species in the air. But he spelled it Zindi air because of the aliens. I'm like, wow, this guy should be on this show with that stuff.
what puns you have, sir.
Yeah,
and then, better to pun you with, my dear.
And then lastly, he has a GIF that goes with it, which is when Worf says to Jadzia, that is a joke. I get it. And he says,
it's not funny.
It is not funny, but I get it. Anyway, good old Aaron. Good stuff.
Aaron is the biggest, I think he's the biggest Star Trek fan that's actually in the
working in Star Trek.
I think he might be. He might be
absolutely
close. I'm going to give Mike McMahon, because he loves Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
As well. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to discredit his love for it. But I don't know, man. As far as knowledge and just actually loving the franchise, he's up there with the best of them.
Absolutely. I feel like
totally.
And it shows. I feel like this show in particular, there's so many people working on it that love Star Trek that I feel like that's why it gets so much heart behind it and why it is so special. And as someone who's also a Trekkie that is lucky enough to be a part of the show, regardless of, you know, this, you know, the small part of what I get to bring to this show, like, It's I'm literally and Bonnie so
was in this episode, guys.
Yep. I was.
The credits might not say it, but Bonnie was in there. I heard her, I swear.
It might be fixed by who knows.
What was your line again, Bonnie?
Torpedo launched.
That was it.
Yep.
Murph. I heard it.
Blue check.
Murph's got back, man. Murph's got back, and the little Murphy butt just launches all kinds of stuff. You know, I feel it. So, if you remember when they first discovered the ship and they were trying to find the pew 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 button, Murph falls on the console and launches the torpedoes and the phasers.
So when Murph launches torpedoes, it's pew pew pew.
Phasers. When he does the phasers, it's a lot of pew 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 all up in the diaper.
It's pew, pew, pew. It's a pewpy diaper. Anyway, there's a lot of toilet. I just want Murph to keep getting cuter, and then eventually his final form is like a kitten, and then I'll be happy.
Basically a dication from the beginning of it.
We have got to. There's no way. I refuse to believe that we've seen the end of that cation. There's no way. They're not going to create like something that freaking adorable and not bring her back at some point. Otherwise, we're all just going to start making demands for season 3 or something. We're going to be like, sorry, Kishin, like, or well, we riot.
First of all, let's already make demands for season 3. Obviously.
Kishin. It'll be called a Kishin because it's a kitten.
A petition Kishin. Second, I feel like that Kishin has started a revolution and has now taken over the Delta Quadrant. And yep. Like next, when we revisit it later, it'll be like, you know,
maybe this she'll be the bad Kishin guy. She's the villain of season 2.
She's the villain.
She's like taking everything like, over.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, she let power go to her head. Now she's taken over.
There's
like
an
entire army
member
of miners.
I want her to be the seventh member of the crew, honestly. I want her to be the one.
I feel like when the pilot episode happened, or when they take off in the ship, I think everyone was just so mad. Like, they left the cat. You know, it's like that.
Whatever happened to that, save the cat?
Yeah, I was about to say it's that old Hollywood trope. Like, no matter how bad a villain is, if they save the cat, like there's
they're
always
like,
some kind
so
of morsel
thinking,
of good.
Save the cat. Eventually, you'll see her
well,
later.
Well, honestly, let's just put it this way: the cat saves herself.
Hell yeah!
I feel like that cat took care of herself. Like as soon as she had that thing off her ankle, it was all hell.
Yeah, that you can't draw something that cute and just let it go.
Yeah. Revolution. My cat's probably freaking out going,
whoa, that was realistic right there.
I can do a pretty good cat and I can do a good baby cry. I've done quite a few babies in my time and that did not come out correctly, but like cartoon voice wise. Oh yeah. Since we're talking about diapers and Murph's torpedo launching.
Wow.
Ooh.
That's
pretty damn good.
Wow.
No, sorry. That got a little out of hand.
That was pretty good.
It's a little rough. It's a little rough. I gotta warm up. Yeah.
Wow.
Or with a. Anywho, you can cut that. We'll fix that in post.
No way.
That's great.
You got baby sounds.
Mm-hmm. That was the baby cat right there.
That was the purr. Now I'm turning into Eartha Kitt.
Just about out of time here, guys.
Sorry, guys.
So, but they're like, more baby. Nope. Sorry.
No one's ever asked for that.
Come back
next
week.
Wait till I do it in a restaurant. Then it turns out, please don't ever.
You just do whatever it takes to get the tater tots
on the
kids
way,
menu.
I
want the kids menu.
This Barnes Franks guy or whatever, Commander Frank, I'm not liking this guy. He exaggerated what happened.
Right?
Yeah, he's a sweetie. He is... identifying his truth, Sirach. This is his truth.
A sweetie lying, really. Saying that like they were barbarians or like they came in, they were huge and evil and and then she was like, they were a bunch of kids. You forgot to mention that they were children.
Yeah, I'm not liking this guy. And he was also kind of rude when he first saw them in the beginning. Second time that I'm not a big fan of it. So
three strikes and you're out, right, Ciroc?
Yeah, so if he turns out to do something bad later on in the future, like some like Eddington, I won't be surprised.
What? Mm. Eddington was fighting for his right to party.
Yeah, right.
You've got to fight for your right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't trust him. Something's up with that guy.
Yeah.
Anybody that would lie on some kids, man.
Totally. He's rat.
He was just embarrassed.
Kids. You're right. It's one thing to like rat out people, but like he's just like, he's like, get those kids.
The baby did it. It was the baby. Yeah.
And I would have gotten away with it too if it weren't for those meddling kids.
And their ugly worm guy.
And their worm. Their slime worm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by the way, one of my favorite lines too was when Outrageous O'Connell or whatever comes out of the hatch and he's like, well, this is awkward.
Yeah.
It
was just a nice little fun. I laughed for that one.
It was great. I love how they now have like a stowaway, you know? They're smuggling a smuggler.
You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They got a ragtag group. It's good. It's getting fun. Mm-hmm.
You guys have any final thoughts before we say adieu until next week?
Next episode should be great because this whole Romulan Treaty Act of War stuff has got my interest peaked. So
right?
I'm looking forward to the next one.
And how cool is that? That, you know, kids watching this are now getting to see, you know, they're really getting into the meat of Star Trek. And now kids are discovering who the Romulans are, you know, the neutral zone, like all of these terms that we're all so familiar with now kids are hearing. And it's just, this show is so great with introducing Star Trek to a younger generation that I just can't wait for them to now watch other series and recognize what's happening. Like they're going to be able to understand, you know, oh, there's the Romulans, there's this, there's the neutral zone. Like they're all going to understand this because of Star Trek Prodigy. And I just love this show so much. And now we're getting into some meaty war.
I hope they have like toys, like action figures for the kids to play with. So that way, like you've got the crew, but then you've also got Vice Admiral Janeway's crew. And you can also get some Zindi toys. And you can also get some Kazon toys.
You just want a Zindi toy.
I just think it would be cool. Like let these kids have a new generation of really cool like toys and action figures. I think
that was the
run.
I want the Zindi Lopper version.
Beautiful.
I definitely want to see the Protostar toy. I think that would be really cool. That Protostar looks really dope.
Yeah, the ship is so fun. It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful.
And,
it's
beautiful. I would love a replica of that ship. I would put that on display.
It has its own kind of shape from when you look at it from the profile or from the straight ahead. It has its own kind of elliptical kind of shape that's, it looks pretty. It looks very pretty.
Pretty ship. That's a nice ship. Look at that aft. Nice ship.
Yep. Bonnie's like, thank you, because she's the ship.
Thank
kinda.
You. Thank you. Yes.
Sleek.
I am very sleek.
All right. So
I'm excited.
Let's go ahead and give a very special thanks to some of our friends. Their names are Homer Frizzell, out in Walter Koenig's former apartment building or apartment complex, I don't remember, in New York. Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, also in New York. Eve England, out in Wales. Yvette Blackman, Tom Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet. Timothy Baum, a.k.a. Grandpa One. T.J. Jackson Bay, out in Missouri. Bill Victor Arukin. Titus Moeller, Darlena Marie, John Mann, Dr. Muhammad Noor. Stay tuned for more on that one. Tierney C. Diekman, Anna Post, Rex A. Wood, Anil O. Palat, Erica Strom, Joe Balsarati, Mike Gu, DQ, Neil Akasaka. That's a good guy. We like him. Justine Norton Kurtzen, Dr. Stephanie Baker, Carrie Schwent, Faith Howell, Edward Foltz, Radek Orszewski out in Southwest Poland, everybody knows, Henry Unger, Mai, live from Tokyo, Matt Boardman, and of course, Dr. Susan V. Gruner.
Dun, 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 dun.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's about it, right, guys?
Yeah.
Man, I am.
Live long and proper.
I am happy when it's prodigy season. Prodigy season is good season.
Way better than wabbit season.
You're that's trying to dumb. Get us to say duck season, right? Not going to happen. All right. Thanks very much, everybody at home, for joining us. We hope to see you again next week. Keep the conversation in the comments section below. Please be sure to give this video a like if you're listening in. Give it a 5-star rating. Leave some comments and tell your friends. And if you don't have any friends, hey, we'll be your friends.
But tell your enemies.
Share it with everybody, whatever. Thanks very much for Bonnie Gordon, myself, and Siroc Lofton. For Mr. Aaron Eisenberg, we will see you next time. And always remember the seventh rule.